afternoon. I am Raymond C. Ferguson, and I'm doing an interview of Professor Paul Doty in his office at Harvard, the biochemistry department. Paul, we first want to start with your father's occupation. What did he do?
Yes, he was in the oil business, and first in West Virginia, and then in Western Pennsylvania, where we moved when I was about seven. He was early in his career had been the telegraph operator in our town, and then worked in the oil business and managed an office which collated the production of a lot of small companies in Western Pennsylvania. We were relatively poor, and the Depression hit us rather hard, so I learned to operate on a small budget early on.
This was, what was the town in Western Pennsylvania?
It was called Chicora, C-H-I-C-O-R-A. It was about 50 miles north of Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. And your mother, what was your mother's background?
She had, neither of them had any higher education. She came from that part of Pennsylvania. She was a Scottish-English background. My father was background was, I think, half English, half German. And I grew up from seven till I went to college in this town of about 1,000 people, and I was the only child, and had quite a bit of time to myself, in as much as there wasn't many competitions like television and so forth. I guess my father bought me a chemistry set after Christmas when I was nine. It was marked down because it had been frozen and somewhat inoperative, but that certainly got me going. And I had a little laboratory in an outhouse near our home, and did a lot of grass cutting to buy chemicals for it, and that was quite a major preoccupation. When it came to high school, the chemistry teacher was the basketball coach and somewhat more interested in basketball, and so after a while he let me teach the class, and that was a great lift. And I remember so well that in 1934, when I was 14, there were two events in Pittsburgh. One was the dedication of the Mellon Institute, and the other was the meeting of the American Chemical Society. And I saved up my money and went to both, and I was very inspired, particularly the speech at the Mellon Institute. I remember Harold Urey spoke and others, and I really ate that up. The meeting of the American Chemical Society was more differentiated. Jack Kirkwood got the American Chemical Society Award in Pure Chemistry there, and I had a great awe of theoretical matters, but no understanding. So I followed him about. I thought he was a great role model until I saw him go into the bar and have a drink. That was the first year after Prohibition. I was brought up very strictly, and I thought this was certainly inconsistent. And but then I listened to papers and so forth, and then came the presidential address at the end, and I didn't have money for that, so I sat on the balcony while everyone ate their chicken and awaited the presidential address, which followed the dinner. And it was by a man whose name I think was Barton, old Professor Barton from Iowa. and he spoke on 50 years of sewage disposal, which rather took the edge off my keen anticipations. But I tell that only because it comes up later, in that I guess when I was 34 or so, I got the same prize and went to Dallas, meeting the American Chemical Society, to receive it, and saw somewhat late in the day that I was to speak at the dinner that evening where it was being awarded. So I thought I would embellish the story of my first meeting, and so the dinner progressed, and I got up to speak, and I just got launched when I looked down and saw on the nearby table an old man who I recognized as Professor Barlow. So I had to backtrack altogether. I couldn't tell the story, or the whole structure of my speech was gone. So I gave a very poor speech, but I was glad I'd seen him, because I saw on CNN News that he died a month or two later, and I felt that I would be so guilty if I had made a joke about him in his last days.
Well, what books did you read in high school that prompted you, or that helped you teach chemistry?
Well, I was quite a reader, although I'm dyslexic and a slow reader. I read a great deal, and I think The Life of Pasteur, for example, by Valerie Rodot, was very influential. The Life of Madame Curie, and I think it was a four-volume series on the science of life or something, and
you were starting to say Eddington or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, Eddington had a book in those days that I read.
Yeah. Was Paul de Kruijff's book out that early?
I don't think so.
No.
He
was late. He
got that far west, yes.
Yeah.
And
Was there a laboratory manual or teaching manual?
I got an old one from a college in Grove City on qualitative analysis and worked my way through that, I remember. And there was a chemist at a small petroleum products company a few miles away, and I did get visited with him some. But what stands out mostly are these visits to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. So you would have how many in your graduating class from high school then?
There were 22. It was the largest that had ever graduated. This was a wooden schoolhouse with a coal stove in each room. And
okay, you...
So that was I did quite well in school. Languages were difficult because my dyslexia, but I did quite well, and did chemistry, physics, biology, and general science, all four courses, which is not often the case today.
You mean in high school?
Yeah.
Oh, that's unusual. Why Pennsylvania State College then?
So that was what the advice I generally got, that my parents would have liked to have kept me closer to home, but they were rather agreeable to my ideas. That was what also made my upbringing a little was beneficial, I think. They did give me leave to do as I wanted if I thought it too hard enough. So I went to Penn State, and that was a new world. And Frank Whitmore was dean of chemistry and physics then, and he was his personality projected throughout the School of Chemistry and Physics in a big way, and that was very influential. I remember he gave a 1 hour a week course to everyone who was enrolled in chemistry or physics or chemical engineering, and it was really good. It was dynamic and forward-looking, and had lots of moral philosophy, You know, there's no such thing as a dishonest chemist. So I ate that up. That was very good. And then I had the good luck to become acquainted with John G. Aston, Jack Aston. I presume he's now dead, although I haven't seen it. But he was a transplanted Englishman who had the cryogenics laboratory at Penn State and did heat capacities on various molecules, measuring the barriers to internal rotation and so forth. And he took a liking to me, and I took his courses, and even though they were in graduate school, and that was very good. I did a lot of work both for pay and my senior thesis there, and I think that I think my first publication was when I was 19 from there on the rotational barriers and methylamine.
Right. In fact, I looked at that paper, and this is heat capacity and entropy and spectroscopic data alone. Sounded like you were getting the Bright Wilson field.
Yes, that's a little bit. Yes, that's right.
Aston's interest? Or
no, this was Aston. Yes, yes.
Was this the title of your senior thesis? Or
yes, that and the yes, that's right.
So an early paper.
Yeah, that was a very, very positive.
Did you take a straight chemistry curriculum?
It was a straight chemistry. There wasn't biochemistry in those days. There was a lot of urine analysis, and so I didn't come close to that. In fact, I never had a course in biochemistry, and I stayed summers. I worked two or three summers at Penn State, and so that was great.
How did you support yourself?
Well, I did odd jobs and waited in tables quite a bit. I lived at the Alpha Chi Sigma, the chemistry fraternity, and that was good for me too, because I needed some socializing, and I think they were certainly supportive in chemistry as well, so that was positive. And all in all, it was quite good. I stuttered a great deal when I was young, and the speech clinic there got me more or less straightened out on that. I took a course in public speaking one summer school, I remember. So that was all to the good. And then I took a fair amount of physics. I took optics, I remember, from Dr. Rank, and differential equations and vector analysis and so forth. So
Dr. Rank, that rings a bell with me. I can't.
Yes, I.
Was it Arthur Rank, or am I thinking of someone else?
I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But the physics courses I like very much. That's very good for me.
Did you have minors? Was there?
I don't think there were minors then, no.
Mm-hmm. How about math? Did you?
I think so. I remember the differential equations, the partial differential equations, vector analysis. That kept me moving.
Can you remember any particular texts that were used? Or?
Not very well, I think.
How large was your chemistry graduating class?
I would guess it was about, it was fairly good size. I guess it was 80 or 90. I was, I think, president of the student council in the School of Chemistry and Physics, but I don't recall it being a very demanding job. And so then I went off to Columbia. I remember, I was somewhat precocious, so I remember in the summer of 1939 I came to visit. This was between my summer 39. Well, I guess it must have been the summer. No, it was the summer 39. The summer of 40. So before my senior year, I made the rounds. I visited Princeton and had a visit with Irving, and came up here and had a visit with Kistikowski. and went to Columbia and had a visit with Urey, which is, I don't know if I'm just the same ease of access these days to comparable people, but Aston wrote ahead for me, of course, that helped, and I remember visiting Percy Bridgman over here in the physics. He had nailed his charter on the wall of not allowing anyone from Nazi countries to visit his laboratory, and I really came away with the feeling that the war was really on after that trip, because it didn't quite seem that way back in Pennsylvania.
From Bridgman or from other people?
From Bridgman, well. Fistikowski was already talking about going off to the explosive laboratory in Pittsburgh, and Urey didn't think he would be there by the time I arrived, and so on. Okay. So I got offers from all of them, and they were all attractive, but I went to Columbia, I guess on the theory that there were more people there, and therefore there might be some left after whatever the war did. But that was also a good experience, because I had the most remarkable set of people in that first fall term of 41 before the war really, the Manhattan Project really took over. I had Urey and Fermi and I sat in on Robbie's lectures.
And Joseph Meyer.
And Joe Meyer, yes. And Lemaire, he taught thermodynamics. And Teller, Edward Teller, theoretical physics. So that was quite a exciting.
Sounds like you were taking more physics than chemistry.
Yes, it does. I think I was. I think chemical physics wasn't defined as a subject area yet, a concentration area. That's what I was sort of doing. Yes, and I was not good in organic chemistry. My only C grade in college was in organic analysis. I think where I a combination of phenol and whatever it was that turned into bakelite every time I heated it.
Phenol formaldehyde.
Yes, yes.
The reaction.
Yes.
Supposed to be an easy reaction.
Yes.
Not really that book.
Yeah.
It is, in fact, a little bit touchy.
I see. Yes. But I think partly also my memory was not all that good in organic chemistry, so that sort of pushed me off in the physical side too.
What was Teller teaching? Spectroscopy?
No, it was theoretical physics, he was quite a good teacher. And I can remember the first day. He started off. We have to begin with the vector. What is a vector? So I was in the front row and held up my hand and gave the usual definition of scalar length and direction. And he said, "How do you tell that from a chimney?" You know, and I was felt put down pretty badly. And he was a good teacher, and Fermi was terrific.
Was Fermi's English good?
Yes, his English was pretty good, and he taught thermodynamics also. I guess maybe I only set it in his lectures, but they were very good. Mm-hmm. He was a great man. Yeah.
And so then did Urey leave?
So they began to disperse. They set up laboratories there at Columbia, and I guess by the spring term I was working part-time on the Manhattan Project, mostly on heavy water work, which didn't come to anything in particular, but I got a good laboratory experience. And I think by the second year most people had left, and there wasn't much more to do in form of courses. So I did this thesis with Joe Meyer, and he was a theoretician and did not pretend to help much in the laboratory part. But Zim and Bill McMillan and I were together. And
was Zim at Columbia?
Yes, we were in the same class, yes.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I got to know him first off because Lemaire seated everyone alphabetically, and I came in a little bit late, so I got put at the end of the row beside Zim. So that's how that started. Then we eventually married sisters. I later became divorced, but he didn't. So we had a long period there.
These were girls you met at Columbia?
Yeah. So the thesis itself was on electron emissions and some bond energy that one could calculate from it. I enjoyed the apparatus and vacuum tube work and so forth.
These are the papers, a series of papers on the hot wire,
yes,
the hot filament.
That's right.
Experiments.
Yes. And nothing revolutionary, but a good practice, and also very modest requirements. I just think I bound the three papers together for my thesis of 14 pages, and that was it. And but then somehow I got to know Hermann Mark about 43 or 44, and I suppose Peter Debye came along to lecture either.
Were you still working on the Manhattan Project?
I think that was the fading, because it was moving all to Chicago and elsewhere, and I think that probably phased out. And
okay, then
I can't remember how I first made contact with Herman, but I fear it must have been I went to lecture goodbyes over at Brooklyn Poly. So by late 43, the Life Scattering came along, and Jim and I got interested in that, and he built a little apparatus on the side up at Columbia, I got my degree in 44, didn't I? So I think I'd moved to Brooklyn by then.
At this point, were you involved with the rubber project?
That came later, but I did get to know Mark and started going over there on Saturday. They had very good Saturday seminars.
I've heard various versions from various persons. Bert Nichols was telling me quite a bit about the early light scattering work. This originated with Debye, actually.
Yes.
His idea of the light scattering from solutions.
Yes, I think that he deserves the major credit for recognizing that there was a quantitative tool there.
Did he build an apparatus, or did they build an apparatus at Columbia, or was yours the first?
I think ours was the first around there. A man who had a long career in polymers, Billmeyer, I think, was at Cornell and built an apparatus there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so I think the experimental work went along about in parallel. And
so your first papers with Zim came out of the work at Columbia, did they?
Yeah, I think that they came out of the gadgets we built at Columbia. And then I guess I must have moved lock, stock, and barrel in 44 over there, and I think I must have started working on that quartermaster project. And
I think your papers indicated somewhat how you verified the molecular weights and compared the molecular weights by light scattering with the molecular weights as measured otherwise.
Yes, osmotic pressure and so forth, but of course they measured different averages, and therefore it was a little sloppy.
Did you recognize that at the time?
It was pretty loose, and of course throughout all of its history, the biasing effect of dirt in your solution was pretty serious, and we went to great lengths to get rid of that.
Nichols claimed that he sent some molecular weight standards that he had characterized by ultrasensitivity to work with, or somebody to work with. Get to look at those?
I think those were part of Stein's thesis, yes, number 14.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think those are his. And Stein is the head of the polymer group out at the Amherst.
Yes, I know Stein well.
I think of him as my first student.
Uh-huh. I was going to ask you.
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh.
No, he was a very bright young fellow, and it was his senior thesis, actually. I think that was the first.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
And did he stay on for graduate work?
I think he did, yes.
Brooklyn? Uh-huh. So you may have moved immediately into the faculty or instructor?
Yes, I was an instructor, I think, and I think that, as I recall, I taught 9 hours a week, which is something I haven't done since. But I had three courses that met three times a week in the evening. That was really stressed me.
Did Jim go to Brooklyn with you, Brooklyn Poly with you, or did he?
Yes, he was there for a little while, and I don't know quite.
That's I'm really asking you to tell
yes.
other people's stories, but
yes, I'm a little vague on that, mm-hmm. but I think he was certainly there for a while. Yes,
he got the Zim plot named after
that's
him.
That's right. Yes.
But I think you together made an important contribution in the analysis of effects of polydispersity.
Yes,
that
I think
we
pulled that out of it, and that was useful.
Did you sense how important this was, or did it seem important to you at the time?
Oh yes, I think it did seem fresh and new, and we weren't perhaps very self-critical in those days. So it all went wonderfully fast, and Alfrey was there. Alfrey was a great supporter,
yes.
And I did have a paper or two with him, as I recall.
Well, in fact, those were impressive papers. One, specifying the properties of viscoelastic material.
Oh, yes, yes. He was very good. I learned a lot doing that
paper. Was he a graduate student working for you? Or no?
I think he was a year or two older, and therefore he was a little older, yes. So he must have also been instructor or maybe assistant professor, yes.
Well, I think you had two notable papers there. That one was the viscoelastic materials.
Yes.
Statistical thermodynamics of high polymer solutions was the earlier paper.
Yes, and we meant to follow that up in the series and never did. Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. How about your involvement in the polymer liquid interaction by swelling measurements? Connected with your general wartime research? Or?
No, I think that was on the side. I think probably a little bit of it came from the film work, but mostly we were measuring diffusion constants and transmission rates of films. It was aimed at polyethylene socks and so forth for people in the trenches and so on, and rain protection.
You were associated with a Quartermaster Corps project.
Yeah, that was on polymer films, yes.
Were you particularly associated with the rubber project?
No, I wasn't. No, that was more organic chemistry, yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And
So
many of these things were on the side.
I think you had some official title in, with respect to the Quartermaster Corps project, didn't you?
I might have been co-director with the Army fellow.
I saw that somewhere.
Yes, I think that's so.
Okay, fine. But then you didn't stay long at Brooklyn, though.
I guess I wanted to get out and see more of the world, for one thing, having not been in the war itself, and
how did you become a Rockefeller Rockefeller fellow at Cambridge then?
Yes, well, I suppose Van Kuchen, who was in Mark's group and had been in Cambridge and London a lot, excited me by his tale. He was a very good raconteur of the pre-war X-ray business, and then somehow through him and Mark I got introduced to Mr. Pomeroff, who was Van der Rock Fellowships, and so I had a good interview with him, and got the fellowship awarded for in the spring of 46. And I decided I'd take my chances and resign from Pauley and hope to find a job when I came back. And then two or three weeks before I was to leave, I found in the fine print that the fellowship was contingent upon having an academic job to come back to. So I guess the first person I fell upon after that was Charlie Price, who was going to Notre Dame. And so he offered me a job, and I took it there.
Oh, was he going as a
chairman
of the department?
Yes, I think so, yes. Yes.
That's right, he had been at Illinois.
That's right, yes. So that was fortunate, and so I went off to England.
Let's pause here. I'm almost at the end of the tape.